second time today. I'm going to open the House Committee on Business and Labor, and I'm going to open a. I'm just going to start all over, folks. I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 3655.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3655 authorizes the extension of emergency unemployment insurance benefits beginning on the first week that begins at least 14 days after the measure's effective date, and then when the total of the benefits paid reaches $19 million. The measure also authorizes the Employment Department to adopt administrative rule regarding eligibility for the current extended benefits program. The measure declares emergency effect upon passage. There's no amendments in front of you, no revenue impact, but there has been official fiscal statement issue, and I'll explain that during the work session.
Thank you. Tom Byerly, please. Thank you for your patience, everyone.
Morning, Chair Schauffler, members of the committee. My name is Tom Byerly, Administrator for the Unemployment Insurance Division of the Employment Department. I kind of want to say stop me if you've heard this one, but that might not go so good. Thank you for allowing me to do this over because I wasn't real happy with my first testimony anyway. I should have rehearsed this last night, but I don't know. I don't like to look myself in the mirror. Or, sorry, Mr. Vice Chair, I don't like my voice either. House Bill 3655 is a bill that would reauthorize a state unemployment insurance benefit extension, Oregon Emergency Benefits, that was originally passed last session through House Bill 3483. It also has a second part where it would allow us to do some things with some federal unemployment extensions. First, the state benefit part. As I said, this was passed originally through House Bill 3483 last session. It provided $30 million of state-funded, out of the state UI Trust Fund, unemployment benefits for workers that had exhausted all other unemployment insurance entitlement. Because the federal government continued to extend the emergency unemployment compensation extension, many people didn't need to use the Oregon Emergency Benefit extension, so we only spent $11 million of the $30 million that was originally allocated that was set aside in the trust fund. So there is $19 million left in that pot. The second part of this bill would allow us to continue some provisions that were passed last session through House Bill 2203 through this committee that allowed us to pay extended benefits during the exact period of time that the feds allow us to pay emergency unemployment compensation benefits. And the purpose of that is we would reach unemployed workers with fully federally funded benefits so we wouldn't have to impact the trust fund, which potentially could save us on the $19 million that we're going to spend in the other part. So wanted to give a little bit more detail. Again, we have $19 million left from the original 30 that was passed in 3483. We propose, or the bill proposes, that we would pay between 2 and 6 weeks of benefits, no more than 6 weeks of benefits, to someone who has no other unemployment insurance entitlement. The $19 million would probably last between 8 and 10 weeks once we got the program started, and then we would be out of money. The extended benefits part would allow us the authority, anytime the feds say they're going to pay more than half of the cost of extended benefits, we could avail ourselves and use that money to pay unemployment insurance benefits, which saves the trust fund. And if you recall, last time I was before you, if everybody that we think is eligible to file for that extension, it might be in about $9 million back to the Oregon economy, all federally funded. I can't stress that enough. So with that, I'd like to answer any questions if I could.
Any questions of Mr. Byerly? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Tom, thanks for being here today. Couple questions. I know that you talked about this a couple weeks ago. The rate schedule went from a 3 to a 6 in 2010. Can you, just the base rate again, can you remind us what that percentage increase was for employers?
On average, it's about a 40% increase.
40% increase in unemployment insurance
tax rates.
Okay.
From
thank you.
2009 to 2010.
Okay. The $30 million that we set aside in House Bill 3483, was that money included, already taken out of the trust fund to set these new tax rates that went from 3 to 6?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, not exactly taken out of the trust fund, but it was considered in the calculation for our projections for where we're going. So in essence, it was considered to have been spent, but it's still in the trust fund.
follow up if I may?
Yes, please.
Seriously.
So, right in.
So the 40% increase in the new tax to employers already includes the $30 million in the calculation. That's what I'm...
That's correct.
Okay. And then...
Let me interject. It's not a new tax. It's an increase in the rate. Correct?
Did I say new?
Yes, sir.
The new tax rate.
Yeah. The new tax rate.
Just to clarify
the new rate.
That.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So... and I just want to put this again on the record. I think I said this 2 weeks ago. On a $1 million payroll, approximately that would be about $7,000 to $8,000 a year increase for a business today in the state of Oregon. One that I know of, it's going to go up $25,000 for a $2 million payroll that that particular business has on a net income of about $50,000. So I just want to make sure that the committee knows that businesses are paying this increase in unemployment tax. So the last question, if you don't mind me continuing
Please.
To go.
Already.
So this is a good thing to expand the safety net that we have for the unemployed people in the state of Oregon. Can you tell us today what programs that the Employment Department has available, has implemented, or could implement that would help lift people out of the safety net and get them employed?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, we have a couple things going on. Number one, we have a job matching system where we reach out to unemployed workers and register them in our system, and then we get job listings from employers. And in those job listings, they look for certain skills. We match the skills the employers are looking for with the skills that our job seekers have. We notify all of our unemployed claimants that they must be registered in the system to be eligible for unemployment insurance benefits. Furthermore, as people are getting close to the end of their claim, we are again reaching out to them. Most of them stay in contact with us anyway looking for jobs, but we're reaching out to them to see if there's other things that we can offer. We have resume writing classes. We have job finding classes. Furthermore, also through House Bill 3483, we passed an economically disadvantaged worker training program where we're reaching out to individuals who make 110% of the minimum wage or less and getting them into new training, some computer skills, math skills, just things that they can take to make them reemployable or maybe get them out of the minimum wage job that they're tired of working in. Furthermore, we have regular dislocated worker training programs where people can go up to 2 years at a community college if they can obtain the funding through Pell Grants or other means to be retrained and to find new work. In fact, our records are showing that those that do go to school have less likelihood of coming back on unemployment insurance once they've completed their training. Those are just a couple things off the top of my head. I'd be happy to get back to you with more if I can dig some up.
Is there, and I think I just, I had an email from a, I don't know if it was from a constituent or somebody else's constituent about, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead. Let's just continue your question.
About a program, and it was a manufacturing business that had actually kept people partially employed while they collected partial unemployment benefits. Can you describe that program and
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I should have thought of this first in the first place. It's called the WorkShare program. It's where an employer can reduce an individual or employee's work week by 20% or 40%, which in a five-day work week is 1 or 2 days. In that program, on that reduction, the worker can receive or 20% of their weekly unemployment insurance benefit check, as well as the work that they receive from their employer. It does a couple things, or does several things, actually. It allows the employer to stay open. It allows their production to continue. It allows the workers to keep their skills sharp and current. And often it allows the employer to continue health benefits, retirement benefits, what have you, just like they were employed, but they get a small unemployment insurance payment to keep them going.
One more, please. And can you tell us if we have employers that we represent that would be interested in that program? How do they go about applying for that? How do they go about implementing a program like that to help keep people working?
Obviously, they can contact us. We have a lot of information on our website when they hit the workinginoregon.org. And if you go to the employer page, it takes them through several links and there's phone numbers, and we can contact them, we can talk to them, we can send them pamphlets so they can actually download the pamphlet right off the Internet.
And there's a certain length of that time that they can qualify for that?
52 weeks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, while we're on it, and this isn't directed at you, Tom, but you talk about getting people out of work. I getting people back to work. Because, you know, they and people say, well, we have to go through the process before we do X, Y, and Z. Well, they're in the process, and they're engaged in going to you to get a check, and I'm glad you have we have the money to help them stay afloat. But I got to, while I have the microphone, anybody who says no to LNG is saying no to family wage jobs and no to their children. Anyone who says no to pipelines is saying no to family wage jobs and those people's children. Anyone that says no to getting back in the forest and taking advantage of the abundant, renewable, sustainable, bio-friendly resource in the forest is saying no to family wage children. Anyone that says no about pulling water out of the Columbia and irrigating thousands of arable acres, anyone who says no to that is saying no to working families in this state and no to their children. And yes, it's okay for Mr. Byerly to hand you out a fraction of your weekly wage because we just think that's okay. That's what's going on in this state. It's black and white. It's yes or no. It's up or down. And anybody that says anything but yes to those things and more is saying no to family wage jobs in this state, and that's it. I'm tired of talking. I've been processed to death for 8 years in this building, and we're going nowhere but down. And we have no one left to tax. Nobody's left to tax. Okay, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's about the bill.
That, very good.
That's not much.
So everything I just said is about this bill, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're quite welcome.
Mr. Byerly, actually a question about the number at 23%. So it's just kind of I'm assuming that number is a product, I'm guessing, of three variables. The size of the available funds in this case is $19 million remaining of the original 30 allocated. The length of anticipated benefits paid out, in this, you said approximately 6 weeks, and then I'm also guessing the number of people anticipated. Am I missing another variable, and how many people is that? I'm just trying to figure out how you came to the kind of random number 23.
Chair Schaffler, Mr. Vice Chair Barton, actually, 23% is 26 weeks, which is a regular maximum claim, and it's 6 weeks, and that's how it comes to 23%. The reason we land on 23% is some claims, because of the low amount of wage credits in their file, they actually don't qualify for 26 weeks. We don't want to give them 6 weeks when maybe their original claim was only 3 weeks. So it goes to a straight 23%, and that has to be in the law for us to get that calculation in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. I neglected to point out flexible land use for industry and getting access to abundant, inexpensive gravel. Anybody else have anything, Representative Thatcher?
Thank you. I was going to remind you about the gravel.
Thank you.
I can always count on my colleague.
Sure, is the microphone on.
I was wondering how many people you anticipate would be eligible who have exhausted all their benefits and who would be, I guess, participating in this extension of benefits.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, I should have said it's in my notes. It's 18,600 potential eligibles. I apologize. It's in my written testimony.
Okay, so $19 million and 18,600 eligibles. What does that come to? Anybody do their math real quick in there yet?
Well, that's
a lot.
I guess I'm not sure where you're going.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out how much per...
It's $1,000.
Okay, so then...
I'm sorry, okay. Monetarily.
And I'm assuming Mr. Chair is going to okay my next question as well. He's over getting a drink of water, but... So of those people, how many people are just flat without anything right now? And it would not be eligible for this and would not be eligible for anything?
As of today, I would have to go back and check. At the end of the year, we had about 1,900 people that had no eligibility at all, and that's going up about 600 workers every week, 600 to 800 workers every week. So we're probably approaching 4,000, 4,500 people that have no entitlement right now at all.
Even with this?
Well, we would reach them with this.
They would be.
Yes, that's the somewhere. People we want to reach.
So 4,500 would be reached with this extension.
Right. While this is a small bridge, it can be a bridge, could be used as a bridge to get us to spring when generally work does always pick up in Oregon. Generally always, that's a really dumb thing to say. Generally it does pick up in spring and work comes back and people could get jobs.
Speaking of bridges, we need a big bridge. Representative Witt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your
the focus and attention that you pay to job creation. I was talking with General Caldwell about the very particular problems that veterans face in this economy, and in many instances, their social problems are no different than everybody else's. But General Caldwell told me, he said that he believes sincerely that 80% of the social problems that veterans face today would disappear if each and every one of them had a good-paying job. With that said, I just wanted to tell Tom that I'm pleased to hear that they are proactively seeking folks who are being paid relatively low wages and encouraging them and providing them the opportunity and the tools to advance themselves. I think that's a tremendous effort on the department's part. I also want to comment, too, on the unemployment benefits for a part-time week. Several of the industries that I'm familiar with are very much dependent upon long-term customer relations. And it takes a long time to build those relations, and if you lose them, it takes a very long time to rebuild those relations. And, Mr. Chairman, this program may be responsible for saving businesses that would have to close the doors otherwise. So thank you, Tom, for those efforts.
Thank you.
Any further questions of Mr. Byerly? Thanks for your work.
Thanks,
Tom.
Doing a good job.
Thank All right.
You. Appreciate your time.
This is, I'm going to just, there are only three more people on here to testify. If anybody wants to name on the sheet, let me know. But Duke Shepherd, Art Towers, and J.L. Wilson. And J.L., you can sit right between the both of them. In Oregon, we work together, isn't that right? At least on this one.
Thanks, Chair Schaffler. Members of the committee, for the record, J.L. Wilson with Associated Oregon Industries. Nothing earth-shattering. We support the bill, urge its passage. We vetted it among our membership with the same type of questions asked by Representative Cameron with the impact on cost trajectories. The fact of the matter is we supported House Bill 3483 last session. To the extent that $30 million is unexpended, it's helpful to get it out in the economy now. With regard to the second piece, the reach back for folks to access federal benefits, obviously, that's on Uncle Sam's dime, and we appreciate that, too. So we support passage of the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Duke Shepherd with the Oregon AFL-CIO. We support the bill. It is an important, though inadequate, step because what people really need are jobs. We want to see people back to work as soon as possible, but for many of our members, when we've got 35% or higher unemployment in some of our building trades especially, this is an important step for a lot of people. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Arthur Towers, Political Director for Service Employees Union Local 503. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. We're also in support of the legislation. This feels like it's one in a series of good steps for protecting the safety net that was discussed earlier on. Extension of the program earlier or last session is an important step. Passage of Measure 66 to reduce taxes on the unemployed was an important step. This bill is an important step. I do want to flag one other step that's coming down the pike here. Excuse me, on June 30th, and that is on June 30th, 2,900 working families will lose their employment-related daycare under the current state budget. That covers 5,500 children. It means about 2,000 workers who provide that daycare will lose their job. Many of them are not eligible for unemployment benefits. It makes it very difficult for those 2,900 or more working parents to hang on to their job if they can't if they can't afford daycare. So I do want to flag that as an issue for this committee. May not be coming before your committee. May be more of a ways and means issue. But again, as you've done a lot of work on workforce issues over the years, and I do want to flag that issue for you as well. The last point I want to make has to do with a briefing I received from Employment Department workers in Columbia County in Representative Witt's district last week. They talked about having 3,100 job seekers coming through their office and they're with only 30 job postings. The legislature did a great job allowing the Employment Department to staff up to be able to handle that crush of of folks, but they talked about the crisis in terms of trainings that used to be open for every job seeker are now open invitation only. And so the work that you're doing here today is very important, and we appreciate it a great deal. Thank you.
Thank you, Art. And when we get serious about in this building about putting people back to work, we'll have the money to keep those workers on.
Right.
And another thing, a lot of people like to run around bragging about the transportation package. I voted for it, too. You know, we had to pass the transportation package. That was an involuntary action. It had to be done to keep our economy going, keep our roads up. It's like breathing. I'm not a hero for voting for that package. It's like breathing. We had to do it. When we get serious about putting people back to work in this state, and I don't think we are, then we'll have the money to keep those people employed. Any questions of these gentlemen?
Quick question.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Towers, a question for you regarding the foster children issue. I'm actually looking. Do you know the bill number off the top of your head? I believe it was LC-160, and I didn't know what's become of that.
Chair Schaffler, Representative Barton, I think that we're talking about different bills.
Okay.
This is the program I refer to as employment-related daycare,
okay.
And it's a program for parents who are actually working, holding down a job, but can't afford daycare. The current eligibility levels are for folks who are up to 185% of the federal poverty level, and that would be reduced dramatically on June 30th unless something doesn't change in the state budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was confused. Thank you.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment that the subcommittee is holding hearings on this very issue and impediments to people either entering or remaining in the workforce because of child care issues, and we'd be happy to have Representative Barton sit in on those if he'd like.
Great. Thank you. Any further questions, these gentlemen? Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Anyone else want to testify on House Bill 3655? All right. Well, my intention is to work this bill, close the public hearing, House Bill 3655, open work session, and I'd entertain a motion to pass the bill.
Chair.
Representative.
I move we refer House Bill 3655 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3655 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, questions? Representative.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure we have the fiscal impact statements and everything's
yes.
In order.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, yes, we do have the fiscal impact statement. It does not need to go through Ways and Means because the authorization for these funds took place via House Bill 3043 in 2009 session.
So did we receive that electronically?
Yes. It was uploaded to your OneNote notebooks at 4 o'clock, and it's also on the measure tracking system as well.
Okay,
so,
great.
Yes, it
Thank
is
you.
A public document, and it's available.
And we are sending everything like that electronically from now on, correct?
Yes. As soon as I receive it, it gets uploaded to your notebook.
But we're not getting packets every day when we get
it. It depends on the member and such.
No, I understand.
Yes, but yes.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Is there any objection to the motion? All right, seeing none, so moved, and the chair will carry this on the floor. I'm going to close work session, House Bill 3655, and open, just going right down the road.
Yes.
Public hearing, House Bill 3600.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3600 allows counties to charge an additional fee for premium services in excess of the actual cost of processing a development review permit. The measure requires the county, prior to charging additional fee, to adopt a premium fee schedule and standards for justifying the fee. There is a sunset date of the measure of January 2nd, 2015. You have in front of you a -1 amendment, which adds a new section to the bill and expands the measure scope to include cities.
And is that the only change from the bill we passed in session, or are there other
minus changes? The -1 amendment, yes, and the change of the sunset. I should also point out there's no revenue impact, and we're waiting for the fiscal impacts on both the original measure and the -1 amendment.
So we can't move it today?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. There's no one signed up to testify, Representative Esquivel. Oh, well, he's sneaking around on me. All right, Representative Esquivel, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, Medford. This bill actually looks pretty familiar to all of us because we passed the last time out of the House in last session 58-0. It was forgotten and overlooked in the Senate, but we have that squared away, so we've got the field open for it to run down. Now, we at the suggestion, I believe it was you, Mr. Chair, that made the suggestion we should encompass this and include this municipalities within the scope of this bill, because one, the bill is permissive.
And Representative, it's because everyone knows how I really thoroughly enjoy working with our city governments.
Okay. And it was originally for counties, but I think that was a great suggestion that we included municipalities because, like I said, it is a permissive bill. They cannot deviate from the particular program they have in place. That's very specific in the bill. They cannot, example, let's say they have this system in place and it takes so long for it to happen. They cannot say, okay, well, if you pay more, we're going to put you to the front of the line. They can't do that. They have to have a separate road, and you pay for it up front. And if you go on that fast track, then they would have the ability to go out and take this out to the private sector in order to get this accomplished. So that is what this bill is actually about, is fast-tracking a permit and planning process. So that way, especially geared toward commercial, because they're the ones who will take the most advantage of it, will allow them to begin building substantially quicker than they do currently.
And representative.
And municipalities are a unique situation. Example, my municipality, in order to annex into the city, when I was first involved in city government, was 8 to 14 months. And you go to Central Point, which is a city that's right next to us, and it's 2 months. So you have quite a bunch of layers of things locally, and hopefully maybe some of these people will look into, like we did in my particular city, look into why it takes so long to do things, and the answer was because we've always done it that way. So maybe this will get some people to think about how to streamline their own process.
Thank you, Representative, and I really do like this bill. We did the exact same thing for water development several years ago and created a separate queue for those who wanted to pay. Mm-hmm. And it actually, for those that are still in the old queue, it moves them along faster, too. So everybody actually benefits and moves everything along faster, more efficient, and helping us get back to work around here. Any questions of the good Representative? All right,
Mr. Chair.
Oh, forgive me, Representative Matthews.
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And I'd like to thank you for amending the bill to include municipalities. City of Gresham, as an example, you know, we talk a lot about the private sector and unemployment, but we've laid off pretty much our entire fire prevention staff, including the fire marshal. We now have two individuals that serve a population of about 150,000 people in the interest of fire prevention, which includes plan reviews, sprinkler systems, and that sort. The city continues to try to please everybody on an emergency basis, and it's quite impossible for these two individuals to meet those demands. I do believe if people want things done in an emergency situation, they should pay more. That just comes with life, and we all do that. And I think this is a good opportunity for the city to maybe set a standard. So thanks for including it and bringing it back, and let's hope the Senate can at least pick this ball up this time and run with it. Thank you.
In all their wisdom. Representative, any further questions of the good Representative? Okay, thank you, sir. Anyone else like to testify on House Bill 3600? And we can or can't.
Mr. Chair, we're waiting for the fiscal impacts on both of these. The original bill in 2009 session, there was a minimal fiscal impact. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, then we'll have a Friday.
Yeah, and I should point out to the committee members in the audience that for work sessions in the House, it's my understanding that we can do a post and go. So we could do the work session on Friday,
okay.
And I can revise the agenda once we receive that, the final paperwork.
Well, then I think that's what our intention
okay.
Could be. Okay, very good. I'm going to close the... Close a public hearing on House Bill 3600 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3654.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3654 allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services, upon the request of a mortgage insurer, to waive requirements regarding the ratio of aggregate insurance policies that are issued to surplus of policyholders. There is an emergency clause on the measure effect upon passage. You have in front of you a Dash 1 amendment, which has from Representative Holvey, who had some clarification to the measure. Highlights of the amendment include the ability for the department in evaluating a waiver request to consider any other factors that are believed that are relevant in making a decision, and also requires the department to charge a fee for a waiver request for purposes of reimbursing costs incurred in doing the waiver request review. There's no revenue impact, and we are waiting for the fiscal impacts on both the original measure and the amendment.
Okay, I'll Greg Peden and John Taggart, is that right? Do I got that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
before
sir.
I get up, I'd just like to say a compliment what is without a doubt the finest committee administrator and her background. Okay. Really, she explains something fairly complicated in one paragraph extremely well.
Thank you, Representative. Actually, yeah. I would like to thank the proponents for providing me with some very thorough background information.
Nice work.
Gentlemen?
Hi, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Greg Peden here on behalf of the Mortgage Insurance Companies of America. With me today is John Taggart with MICA and our Portland and Oregon Regional Vice President as well. Teresa did a pretty good job of summarizing this issue, and I've touched base with all of you over the last couple of weeks. Just to recap real quickly, the intent here is to allow the mortgage insurance companies, of which there are about six that operate in Oregon, to take this statute to provide some flexibility through an administrative process at the department to ensure that they are able to continue to underwrite insurance in Oregon to ensure that people are still able to buy homes. So this is part of the overall housing market. It's a small piece of the puzzle, but it's a very important piece of the puzzle. One thing that I think I wanted to highlight for you today is you're contemplating this is sort of who's the user of a mortgage insurance, and it's typically a first-time home buyer. It's typically a home of maybe an average sale price of about $150,000. Somebody who can't afford a 20% down on a first-time home buyer. So it is a very significant piece of the home buying public, the housing market as a whole. This bill will allow the department and my clients the flexibility to do a thorough review of financials and make sure that we're still able to underwrite mortgage insurance. So I'll stop there and maybe just throw it open to questions.
You gentlemen have anything to say? I guess we're going to grill Greg here for backup. Any questions, these gentlemen? We don't have all the paperwork, but my intention is to, assuming we have votes, move it Friday. But, Greg, you're not going to be available Friday. If there's any questions pop up between now and then, is that correct?
Yep.
Will one of these fine gentlemen be able to come?
We'll make it available. We'll be available.
That'd
sure.
be great. Yep. Okay.
All righty.
Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I was just curious if you're going to ask the insurance division perhaps to come up. I have a question
right
for
here.
Them.
All right.
Thank you.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I'd like to call Teresa Miller and John McCullough. You might as well come up to me. Those are the only folks I have signed up, so if anybody else wants to testify, just let me know. Teresa, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Mr. Chair,
morning.
Members of the committee. For the record, my name is Teresa Miller. I'm the administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I have provided written testimony. This committee is operating very efficiently, so I won't waste a lot of your time. The one issue that I did just want to flag for you, it was something that I was interested in when the proponents brought this issue to us, and I thought I would just flag it for your consideration. I think it is worth noting that the insurers who have expressed concern related to this requirement do represent a sizable segment of the mortgage insurance market here in Oregon. If they exceed this limit, they won't be able to write new policies, which could potentially limit access to mortgage lending in the state. And so in terms of sizable, I mentioned a sizable segment of the market. Mr. Peden, I think, indicated that there are six insurers essentially who operate here in Oregon. We have received indication from three of those that they may have issues with this 25-to-1 risk-to-surplus ratio. They represent over 50% of our market here in Oregon. So, again, that was just an issue I thought was interesting as I looked at this and just thought I'd bring that to your attention, and would be happy to answer your question, Representative.
Representative Barton, Representative Holby, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Teresa, for talking to me about this issue, and I want to thank Mr. Peden also for, looking at some of the, I guess, concerns I had with the bill, and I think they were pretty minor changes, but I was concerned about the department's ability to look at that market when making these decisions. And so that kind of led me to the Dash 1 amendment. But I guess my question was overall was about the ratio requirement, and I understand, the importance of making sure we have insurers able to write policies in the state of Oregon. And right now the ratio is at 25-to-1, which I believe means that they need to have about 4% capital reserves to back up the policy commitments that they write in the state. And so, and waiving these ratios, at what point does the department say, well, 4% is, you're not meeting that, so we'll say 2% is okay, or 1% or capital? And I know that you can't look at this and give a definitive answer for each and every situation because you're looking at the future, I guess, solvency of the individual company to base your decision on. So, but anyway, that was kind of the root of my question is, you know, how, I mean, these reserves are meant to make sure that they're able to meet their commitments. And so at what point do you say you don't need any reserves, but we're going to waive your requirements anyway?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, I appreciate that question. I clearly didn't do a very good job previously of answering it. It is a tough question. It's a good question, but it's a difficult question, and I do think it depends on the circumstances. I think in many ways when I looked at, and you and I have talked about sort of your comfort level with this bill, and frankly, when I first was approached by the proponents of this bill, I had concerns as well. And I think one of the things that got me to a point of being much more comfortable with this is looking at the decisions we make with regard to financial regulation just on a daily basis. For much of the work we do in terms of financial regulation, we typically don't have really bright line statutory standards that we're following. We often follow standards that are common to regulators across the country. But we also are looking at individual companies, and we're doing very in-depth financial reviews of those companies and then making decisions about how do we address X situation and make sure policyholders are protected. And that's really what we're looking for in each of these situations. So it is difficult to say there's going to be, you know, a ratio at some point that'll be unacceptable. I think it's hard today to say that without looking at all the circumstances. But again, I think my comfort level is that we have professional staff who really do make these types of decisions every day. And I think we rely on them in a lot of cases where we really don't have these sort of cookie cutter statutory standards in place. So I don't know if that answers your question any better than the last couple of times, but I appreciate the question.
John, why don't you go ahead and testify, and then we'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Mortgage Professionals, and obviously we have a very strong interest in making sure that there are mortgages available to prospective home buyers. And as a result, we support the bill. We think it's valuable to provide flexibility in extraordinary times like we are in now, and we encourage you to move forward on the bill.
Great. Any further questions of these good people? All right. Well, thank you very much. Would anyone else want to testify today on House Bill 3654? And once again, we don't have all the paperwork. Friday we'll take care of it. Correct?
Depending on if we receive the paperwork.
Of course.
But I guess stay tuned.
Okay. Very good. I'm going. If nothing else on this one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3654. Is there anything else for the good of the order?
No.
All right. In that case, we're adjourned.